Nationwide, the number of students in full-time online schools is 4 times what it was a decade ago, and grew by 50,000 people to the current 250,000 in the last year alone. In Wisconsin, there are 26 full-time virtual schools, 25 virtual charter schools, and 1 virtual statewide high school, with thousands of students enrolled. And traditional brick-and-mortar schools are jumping into the fray as well, with more and more classes being offered online. This hour, we talk about virtual schools in western Wisconsin with a full-time online teacher whose virtual school is based in Barron. And we'll get perspectives from an assistant superintendent of the brick-and-mortar, from the brick-and-mortar side of things. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for tuning us in this evening. I'd like to introduce my guests. First, I'll welcome Melita Mullen. Melita is a middle school course instructor and enrichment specialist with the Wisconsin Advanced Learning Academy in Barron, Wisconsin. Melita Mullen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And I told you I would do that. That's the end of it. Melita Mullen. And next, I'd like to welcome Tim Lipham. Tim is the assistant superintendent for the Eau Claire School District. Tim Lipham, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And as always, I'm going to appeal to my audience. This program wouldn't be what it is or what it can be without listener comments, without listener feedback. So give us a call with your question or comment. The number is 1-800-228-5615. What do you think about virtual online education? The number, 800-228-5615. You can also check out the West Side Facebook page and leave a question or comment there if you're a little shy to go on the radio. So, first of all, I want to start with Melita Mullen. There are a number of types of online learning options out there. I've mentioned a few of them in the K-12 range, including virtual schools, blended learning, online augmentation, you know, just some supplementals. Where does the Wisconsin Advanced Learning Academy fall in that spectrum?
We have a majority of our students are online full-time, and we do have a group of students that are blended that take courses online, and then they also, many of them are involved in sports and such at the high school, so they take part of their classes at the high school and then part online.
Okay. All right. And when was the academy formed?
We are in our second year.
Okay. And so how does that whole process work? I mean, how does, is it just spring up or what has to fall into place?
Well, I think there has to be a need for it first. There has to be, you know, students to attend, of course. Mm-hmm. And I think it's ideally up to the administrator. If there's a need for it, then a charter school springs up.
Okay. So it is a charter school, meaning it's a private organization.
Yes.
Okay. Tim Lipham, are there any virtual charter schools in the Eau Claire School District within the boundaries?
No. The Eau Claire Area School District does not have a virtual school. Although we do a contract and partner with the Wisconsin Virtual School for services on an as-needed and individual basis.
So how does that, I mean, as-needed basis, how many classes are we talking about, or what's the nature of that arrangement?
Right. I think it would probably fit best under the blended concept that you referred to earlier. Based on a student's need, we do expect our students to attend full-time in one of our schools. But there are times, because of unique circumstances that a child has in their life, could be of an aptitude or interest that they're involved in, could be because of a physical or mental situation that they're addressing. It could be because of temporary disruptions to their ability to be in a traditional school. We do contract with the virtual school to provide ongoing and blended educational programming.
Okay. What are the benefits, Melita Mullen? Let's talk generally about online education, and not just specifically at the virtual school that is in Barron, but what are the benefits for students going to online, getting their education online?
Well, I think students enroll in an online school for a variety of reasons. We do have a student that trains horses and does horseback riding during the day. And so she enrolled into an online school so she can attend school at night and continue that way. And it's not for everybody, I can tell you that. It's definitely, it's a rigorous form of education. You have to be definitely independent, self-motivated, and self-disciplined to be able to do this type of schooling.
Right. And so, Tim Lipham, what are the benefits of brick-and-mortar schools? Is it that you've got that structure that some students might require? Or?
Right. I think the bricks-and-mortar concept is more about where the education is actually taking place and not how the education is being delivered.
Okay.
Within that brick-and-mortar structure, there are online activities that are taking place embedded in the what might be referred to as the traditional educational program. The appeal sometimes is that there is structure, that there is individual and immediate response and attention that's provided to students. There's certainly a camaraderie and identity development that goes in when you have social networking that occurs. The ability to have organized clubs and activities provides advantage and interest to students and families, those sorts of things.
I want to get through what a day in the life is. So first of all, Melita Mullen, in the virtual academy or at the Academy in Barron, the virtual school, what does it look like? I mean, for a student to do a full day's work, I mean, what kind of is there a certain number of hours that they have to spend at a computer or?
Well, it depends on we have a variety of coursework available. There's synchronous and asynchronous type classes. I teach classes that are asynchronous where it's the students work at their own pace. I grade papers within a 24-hour period. And that usually, within a week's time, there's a certain amount of work that is required, and they do that. For the synchronous classes, I'm on the other end at the same time the student is. So it's more of, that's more towards the traditional learning where I'm right on the other end. And the student can click a button, they have a little help button where they can ask me a question right then and there. And I can respond, and so there's two types of
synchronous, non-synchronous. Okay,
yeah.
And so, if a student is doing the non-synchronous, do they have a requirement assignment per day or per week, or is it just
they have a scheduler?
Okay,
and they have a certain amount of time to complete a certain amount of work. So it's completely up to them to if they want to do like 10 lessons one day. And don't do any the next day, but there's a certain standard that they do have a certain amount of work to complete within that time.
All right. And Tim Lipham, I have to ask you then, do you see any downsides to that type of flexibility as far as students' development or, where the structure is just not there?
Yeah, I think when Melita brought it up originally or initially that online learning is not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
A student needs to have or a family needs to have the ability to provide supports, structure, perseverance, self-discipline, those things. The downside is when a person thinks that that's something they're going to be able to do and they step out of a more structured, scheduled educational program and they find themselves not being able to meet the expectations of the online course.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to get caught up at that point is problematic for students, and we do see that happen at times with students in the Eau Claire School District. The other online, so that would be good, I think, yeah.
Okay.
Well, I was thinking there was another connection to it, but that might be another topic, so I'll hold it for a minute.
I'll just leave it for myself. When I was in college, I took an online class, and it was pretty interesting. That freedom, I did what I always do, is I pushed it off to the end. And I really had to cram in order to pass it, which I did. But so I could see where there would be, you know, challenges there for people that are that don't have very good self-discipline like myself. But if a person finds themselves in that situation, what are their, I mean, does that mean the student is likely to drop out, or is there a way for them to get, an extension, or are they just kind of on their own?
Well, it really depends on the student themselves. We try to give them as many opportunities as we can to either catch up, but I think generally, even within brick and mortar schools, if they don't do their work, something else has to take place, whether they have to go back to a traditional school or what.
So there is a time, I mean, the time frame, the semester ends at the same time that the Barron regular school district?
A tiny bit more flexible, but generally, yes.
Okay. So it's not like they can just keep working on it until it's finished?
No.
Okay. One-word answers make me nervous as a talk show host, but that's a good answer then. We're going to go to the phones now, and we've got Paul calling in from Spooner. Paul, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon. Question is about funding, and the funding. The question is the school in Barron, what type of state aid do they get? How much state aid do they get per student versus the local Barron school district? And what happens if a student were to attend this charter school and say a month or 2 months later it doesn't work out, want to go back to the school, does that money then go back to the public school district?
Well, thanks for the question. I actually did a little research on this myself because I had the same question. But and I know that you're an instructor and you're not necessarily in the administration, Melita Mullen, but what take a stab at it. What do, is the funding the same for the academy?
I'm not completely sure. I've read here and there about things where I think the home district, the money follows the student, a certain portion?
Yeah.
Okay. And if it doesn't work out, I'm not exactly sure what happens at that point when it comes to the financial end of it.
Well, let's talk to an administrator here. Do you have any ideas? Is it the same, to the best of your knowledge, Tim Lipham, the same student per student funding, which is, I can't think of what it is, per student, 5,000
right.
something?
Well, it's a little different for every district, and I'm not a financial person, but yes, in general, a percentage of dollars that would go into state aid per student would follow the student to a virtual school. And that's one of the reasons you've seen an increase in enrollment in virtual schools has been some of the people, and I don't have a percent, and I looked online as it's coming to the show, and the state has not yet collected this data, but homeschoolers to be able to access online schools through a charter school have to open enroll. And to open enroll from one district to another, you need to be part of the home district. So we're seeing an increased number of students, at least in Eau Claire, who traditionally had been homeschool students who will enroll in our district as a means of open enrolling to a virtual school. So when that happens, a percentage of the state aid will follow that student to the virtual school district. If the student stops, I don't know if there's a reimbursement made back to that district or not. I'd have to check on that with our business
well,
guy.
Well, and from what I found, it didn't seem like there was. It wasn't very clear, so I'm not giving an answer here. But it did seem like it was if they drop out. If a student drops out from your district, do you have to give money back to the state?
No.
Okay.
Dropping out's a little different in a virtual school. If the student stops attending, as Melita indicated, they go back to the public school system. For us, in the state of Wisconsin, you are obligated by law to be in public ed until you're 18 years old.
Right. Well, Paul, that's the answers we can give you at this point. I think it'd be worth giving a call to the administration there at the Barron School or what have you. But thanks for the call. And I think he's gone. Well, with that, we are talking about virtual K-12 schools in western Wisconsin and online education as a whole. Some of the concerns, some of the benefits. We'll have more of this discussion with Melita Mullen and Tim Lipham when we return. You're listening to The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio, coming to you from WHWC in Eau Claire. Thanks for joining us. We're talking this hour about virtual online education, and particularly about virtual schools in Western Wisconsin. The benefits and maybe some of the drawbacks are just the differences in brick and mortar versus online. I'm joined this hour by Melita Mullen. She's an instructor at the Wisconsin Advanced Learning Academy, a virtual school in Barron, and Assistant Superintendent of the Eau Claire School District, Tim Leibham, who is representing the bricks and the mortar this hour. If you've got a question or a comment, feel free to give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615. We've already had one good question on the this whole issue, so phone lines are wide open. Get yours in as well. You can also leave a question or a comment on the West Side Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and type in the West Side. Got to have the. I'm done rambling. Get back to the questions now. Melita Mullen, back to the virtual school side of things. How do you measure things like attendance or student progress? How does that work in the online world?
Well, the attendance, typically the student will log in every day. And, you know, of course, it counts how long they are logged in and working on their coursework. And usually with a lesson, there's, you know, little assignments afterwards, just like in traditional school. So it's attendance can be counted that way, or if the student just keeps track of the attendance themselves, if they're a little more proactive student, and we send them out an attendance record, and they you know, fill out when they worked on this assignment,
okay,
et cetera.
All right. And the student progress, it's kind of, if they're working on their own or at their own pace, I mean, how do you, per week, I mean, I imagine it's different for the students that are in more of a chronological kind of a situation, but how do you measure their performance?
Well, one thing I was thinking of is in a traditional classroom, we have tiered learning because nobody's at the same level.
Right.
But one of the good things about the virtual school is on the asynchronous, or I'm sorry, the synchronous learning, we have these lessons, and if the student is doing great and, you know, already knows the stuff, I can adjust the curriculum just for that student. Or if they're struggling in, you know, another subject, then I can adjust it there, and it's tailored just for that student.
All right. And I didn't ask earlier, but I wanted to, what's a day in your life as an online teacher? I imagine you don't have to leave the home if you don't want to. Can you?
I don't, but it is pretty busy. I wake up pretty early, and, of course, I check my emails right off the bat. I log on to my side of the curriculum, and I just kind of wait, I guess. You know, I do other things at home or as needed. I have two little ones at home, so... Mm. But, you know, and then an essay will come in for grading, and then I can, you know, grade it then, send it back with a grade and that type of thing. And that usually lasts, but at the same time, it's even a little more busy because, you know, maybe something will come in the evening, and I could wait until the next day, but I love my job, so... So I'll go ahead and grade it then.
And very quickly, have you always been an online teacher?
No, I haven't. I still do a lot of substitute teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So I see both sides of it, and I see both, you know, the drawbacks and the benefits of both sides.
Sure.
So,
Tim Leibham, who enrolls for online learning? What is there a specific, I mean... Obviously, students do, but is there a certain type of student, or is it someone that might be fed up with, you know, the traditional way of things? Is it younger kids, you know, the newer generations?
Mm-hmm.
Can you pinpoint it like that?
Right. Not really. every student obviously is different, and what motivates them and their family dynamic and their needs are unique. But there are some general trends I think we could draw. First off, again, when we think about the, you know, the bricks and mortar school, we prefer to, it better to call it as traditional, as I said earlier, that there are unique and creative and online activities taking place within those walls.
Right.
So
there's a blurred line there, obviously.
That's right. 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 The school may have been built in 1950, but that's not how it functions.
Right.
But we see two types of students, or really three. Again, one is a student who has an interest or a family has a situation that's going on that really prevents the child from attending a traditional school with a calendar in a week and a lesson assignment and learning that occurs on a school calendar. And those students go online, and they also can supplement that with their own experiences and what they do, be it travel or an interest or an aptitude or some skill that they're looking independent of the school to develop. Then we have students who are also just emotionally, they don't socially appreciate or really benefit from the school culture. And they may be, for lack of a better term, people have said they've matured beyond their current peers. Mm. And it doesn't fit with them. And that structure is limiting and inhibiting and frustrating. And these are students who then can express that and learn things beyond having to deal with some of the social things that go on in a traditional school. And then we see students who are frustrated. And if that's because of we've not been able to figure out how to connect with the child at school, or the family is frustrated with open enrolling their child from a public school where there's more day-to-day contact and checking, mm-hmm. where they go to a virtual school, there's part of that as well.
And Melita Mullen, what are the students that you've got at the academy, the Wisconsin Advanced Learning Academy? How many students, first of all, and is there any one segment of the population of students that's tend to gravitate towards your institution?
I don't have the exact number, but I would think we're just over 100 enrolled.
Okay.
And you know, they enroll for a variety of reasons. He brought up where the traditional classroom just doesn't fit them socially,
mm-hmm.
which totally makes sense. He said it well.
Okay.
Very right. Well.
We've got another caller, and this one will be calling, or we'll talk to Mary in River Falls. A reminder to all the other listeners out there, we're talking about virtual schools this hour, virtual online education. And we're also talking about bricks and mortar institutions, schools that are kind of working their way into, or have been for a number of years, working into online education as well, supplemental at least. The number to call is 800-228-5615. The number again is 1-800-228-5615. Mary, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
I guess I had a question about, like, advanced learners in the high school for virtual school. Can they take classes, you know, if they're really advanced and just fly through the credits and graduate, say, in 2 years? And then I guess another question I have, too, is can you attend a traditional high school and then take the virtual online school simultaneously and do some of those classes at night or in the summer, like AP classes, where
sure.
you can earn extra credits faster?
That's good stuff. Good questions. First one, Melita Mullen, students, can they rush through their high school education in 2 years?
They can. We have a student right now who is enrolled in the Youth Options, where she takes courses in Rice Lake from the college. And she also takes courses through us. And she was working really hard last year to work ahead. So that's a great possibility if they want to graduate early graduation.
Cool.
Definitely.
And Tim Leibham, can a student be enrolled at Memorial High School and do kind of double duty, take night classes or do online classes at night to get through twice as fast?
Yes. What a student cannot do is be enrolled in two different public schools at the same time. So you cannot be half-time in a virtual school, say in Barron, and half-time at a school or a school in the Eau Claire School District.
Okay.
However, if you're a full-time student or if you're a student in a public school, you do have the right to take or to access two courses beyond your school district, be it in another public school district, a traditional school, or an online course. Also through a program similar to the Wisconsin Virtual School that we contract with in Eau Claire, if we don't offer a course or if a student has accelerated beyond the level of courses we offer and that a youth options at the university or the technical college does not fit, we can contract with that online school to provide those services.
Fascinating. And is that something new, the two classes outside the district?
No, that's been in existence for a number of years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Mary, there you have it. Does that suit you? And she's gone. The number 800-228-5615. We're talking about online virtual education in public K-12 schools. The number is 800-228-5615. So K-12, the Academy in Barron, Melita Mullen, is a K-12 K-12 school?
Yes.
So kindergartners can take online classes. That seems like it might be too young, or am I just not with it?
Well, it's possible. You being not with it, but
that's definitely possible.
It's possible. It's K through 12. We do have courses for kindergarten. It's now at home. If that would be the case, of course, you know, there would have to be a support system at home to be able to do that. And so if there is, then so be it. Absolutely.
I want to talk now about social interaction and Melita Mullen, aren't schools or students that are enrolled in a virtual type school full time, aren't they missing out on things like sports, dances, pep rallies, anything like that? Or are there options?
There are options. We're progressing as this whole virtual world, but for our second year, we've had many field trips where we don't bus. We usually have a field trip, and the family will all meet at the location, say Crystal Cave, and it's a chance to socialize at the same time. You know, I've had an opportunity to get to know a lot of the families this way, and we. We're trying to give as many opportunities like this, enriching opportunities, for students to have the student life. We have a student council where we try to coordinate certain art contests, essays contests, things that students typically do in their classroom. We try to provide an opportunity to do that, and it's also a little more self-motivated. This year we did the Read to Succeed program through Six Flags, and we had a number of people participate in that.
Cool.
So,
and Tim Leibham, a big part of going to school is social interaction. With students at home in front of a computer screen, do you feel that they might be missing out on important social skills or learning that by being in a sea of, you know, 1,000 other kids?
Right. Again, I really think it needs to come down on the individual basis.
Sure.
Some students, that may very well be the case, and being required to engage with other students on a regular basis would be advantageous, although the student may not see it that way at the time.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I think to think that a student is simply sitting the same school calendar in front of a computer screen working, that's where it's different. And as Melita indicated, there are and it depends on the community and where you live, but there are all sorts of activities that go on during the school day where there are school-aged children or adults or whomever engaged in a variety of social and educational endeavors. And that tapping into those things does provide students outside of the traditional school an opportunity to interact with other folks. Not to say that there's not somewhere on the planet now somebody sitting in front of their screen in the room with nobody around them, but typically that's not the case in a virtual school environment.
Yeah, it's in the neighborhoods. There's still other kids mm-hmm. and whatnot. Gotcha. So, Melita Mullen, who decides or how is the online curriculum decided? Do you just say, I've got a great idea for a class, or do you have to follow certain state requirements?
We do follow the state requirements. We have to.
It's the same?
It is. It's the same for us as it is traditional schools.
Okay. Because there's a lot of talk about the, you know, voucher schools or charter schools. People would say that they're, you know, there's a lot of arguments that they're not as accountable as whatnot. So I just thought I'd ask. Tim Lipham.
Yeah, I think that's one area that a family would need to investigate significantly. The program that the school district is providing in a virtual environment, what is that program? What is the curriculum? What are the materials or the instructional strategies that are embedded in the program? Because they do vary. There's currently not a state oversight of what those delivery systems or programs may be. And therefore, they can vary significantly. Over the years in the Eau Claire District, we have seen students who have struggled significantly because the level of rigor of the course and the engagement in the course took a significant amount of time. I've also known students who have completed a semester's worth of work in several weeks. Mm-hmm. So you really need to do your investigation and your study and your inquiry of what's the program, where is it from, right? How do they measure the standards? How do they apply to post-secondary institutions, things like that?
Is the Academy in Barron able to specialize in things that maybe the Barron School District themselves are not able to through the online model?
Such as classes?
Yeah, specialized classes for, I would guess, you know, online kind of technology stuff.
Yes, I think what you were asking, just like if there's not a certain course, say a foreign language offered at your high school, you have the opportunity to take it online, mm-hmm. say Japanese or, you know, something to that effect.
In the Eau Claire School District, Tim Lipham, what are the schools that, or what are the classes that you offer online through the Wisconsin, the virtual high school?
Right, they offer a wide range of courses. So depending upon the need of the students, we would meet the course with the student. There's not a set program that we would tap into to provide for a student. It would be individualized based on their need.
Oh, so you're not offering, say, French online or something like that specifically?
No. Correct.
Okay, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the student is at the brick and mortar, but they can choose to. I guess I'm mixing this up somehow.
Yes. A student who is a full-time student in one of our high schools or middle schools, let's just say high school because that's the primary place where it's located, mm-hmm. they could have a full 7-period day in the traditional high school and still access up to 2 courses in another state school district.
And whatever they offer.
In whatever they might offer,
okay.
Correct.
Okay.
The district would not have to approve that if the home district offered the same or a comparable class. But if it's not a comparable class and a neighboring district or an online program had something unique that the student was interested in, there is a means by which you can access those courses.
Okay. Well, I think it's time to talk about, we've talked about the different offerings, and now the question is, do virtual schools and online courses really prepare students for higher education? Reporter with Westside Reporter and producer Hannah Weichel spoke with 2 virtual school 11th graders who are now just about to get into college. So we have a special report from Hannah.
Sabrina Peterson has been taking online classes since she was in 7th grade. She's planning to go to college to become a registered nurse. Peterson says the freedom to choose her own classes has helped her shape her curriculum to focus on her career.
They've allowed me to gear my education towards medical school. You know, my electives are extra science classes like anatomy and lots of health classes. I'm just really getting it burned in my head.
Shaden Weehy is the student body president at the Advanced Learning Academy of Wisconsin. She says the staff there works with students who are planning for college.
And that guidance counselor helps you with ACTs, SAT prep, colleges, getting your transcripts, all that kind of stuff. if you ever need any help with colleges or planning for the future, you always have your guidance counselor there with you.
Peterson says she scored high marks on a recent college entrance exam. She says her virtual education has prepared her as well as any traditional high school would have.
I'm graded by Wisconsin certified teachers, and I'm learning the same thing as other students. I'm just not in the classroom.
Both Weehy and Peterson say they aren't worried about moving back into brick-and-mortar settings when they go to college. In fact, Peterson says she's eager for the change.
Yeah, I've been homeschooled for a while, and so I'm kind of excited to switch gears and actually be there with teachers. And I'm actually going to be taking a couple classes online, too, and so it'll be like half and half because I love online so much.
Weehy says virtual school students should have no problem making the transition into college if they discipline themselves and make the most of their online classes. Hannah Weichel reporting for Wisconsin Public Radio in Eau Claire.
Thanks so much for that, Hannah, and nice job. Lita Mullen, have you seen any of the students that have been at the Academy in Barron, the Wisconsin Advanced Learning Institute, or Academy, move on to the higher education and beyond? Have you followed up with any, I guess?
I haven't followed up with any, but aside from the Youth Options student, and just I've been in and met with just a few of our student council, because they are actually blended students.
Okay.
And, you know, I know they are planning on going to college, and it's they are self-motivated, and I think that's important, especially when you go to higher learning. You have to be self-motivated, and you have to have that personality or that drive to be able to succeed.
Absolutely. There's less hand-holding, so to say, in higher ed. Tim Leibham, do you think that online, total online education prepares you in the same way that a high school traditional brick and mortar like Memorial, like North, does?
I think for some students, certainly.
Other
students, it doesn't.
Okay.
And that's why I brought up earlier about investigating the program. What's the outcome? What's the track record of success? Because no school is without need to improve in some area. So, but given that there are varying differences in how the program's delivered, what the curriculum looks like, how the standards are going to be met, it really is incumbent upon the family or the student to investigate that significantly. You bet.
We're talking this hour about online education, virtual schools in Western Wisconsin, and blended learning at other districts throughout the state. The number to call in with your question or comment is 1-800-228-5615. We've had a couple of really good questions so far. We've got three open phone lines, so you do the math. We want you on the program. 800-228-5615 is the number to call. We will take our final break here on the west side on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back with more from Melita Mullins, middle school instructor at the Wisconsin Advanced Learning Academy in Barron, and Tim Leibham, Assistant Superintendent of the Eau Claire School District. You're listening to the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We're talking this hour about virtual schools in Western Wisconsin and online blended education at the brick-and-mortar institutions that are in Western Wisconsin. We're talking about the benefits, we're talking about some of the concerns, and what it means for public education overall. The number to call in with your question or comment for either of our guests, Melita Mullins with the Wisconsin Advanced Learning Academy in Barron, or Tim Leibham, Assistant Superintendent of the Eau Claire School District, the number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. Now, I want to pull back, you know, take more of an overall education kind of a look here. It seems like, Tim Leibham, that education is changing dramatically, and it always has, I'm sure, but with this whole online revolution that's been underway for quite a long time, how is it changing everyday operations for education for Eau Claire.
Right. First off, it's a mindset on how you see what is education. First off, we live on a global planet where now information and interacting with people around the globe is instantaneous. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we're in an information society where getting information, using information, blending information to create new knowledge is happening all the time. And our students need to be taught how to incorporate those skills. One of the values of the fine arts, for example, or the applied arts, gets at that sort of teaching and thinking when it comes to instruction. And therefore, the Eau Claire School District, we begin having discussions or have begun having discussions on how do we or when do we, as we look at our graduation requirements, perhaps blending in and phasing in a requirement to have students take at least one course in a certain area in an online manner. That's been discussed at the state level as well. Should that be part of a graduation requirement? It just hasn't gone anywhere. But we are looking at that and wondering, how would that look? What would that mean? What are the resources that would have to be in place to accomplish that? Those things, because that is an integral part of all of our lives if you have the ability to access the Internet.
Absolutely. So other than having those questions yet to be answered, what else? What is stopping that from being a requirement at the Eau Claire School District?
One would be, what curriculum would we use? Would we contract with a business or a service to provide that course?
Mm-hmm.
Do we offer it in multiple courses? Do we have enough online resources to provide that course? Where would it fit? How would we measure it? How would it be graded? Where, you know, those sorts of things. We just haven't concentrated the time on that at this point.
Okay, Melita Mullen, I wanted to ask, being that, you know, most of my life is online, spent online. I think a lot of people, most of their life is spent online now, or a lot of things. Does going to school at a virtual, in a virtual setting, does that prepare them even better for the future than I'm not trying to make this an either or kind of a thing, but would there be advantages there for a student that got out of that graduated from an online institution versus traditional?
Well,
there you are.
I think it might. When I look at the things that that are in my world, there's a lot of careers where you work remotely from home,
mm-hmm.
or you work because of the technology and the software, where you might only have to go into the office one day a week. Whether it be, you know, there's a variety of careers and professions that's available to. So I think, in a way, you know, a student who was an full-time online student would have an advantage because that is something that they are already doing.
I want to talk now about funding, and we had Paul call in earlier with a question about the amount of money per student. We've already gone through that, and again, we don't have someone from the administration over at the Academy in Berrien, but online education, is it more cost-effective than brick and mortar? And I'll start with you, Melita Mullen.
Well, one thing that popped into my head, I thought, you know, when you get these emails from your bank that says, go paperless.
Right.
You know, and that seems to be the trend with that. We are going paperless in education, in many things. So.
Mm-hmm. Tim Lipan, same question. I mean, is the Eau Claire District able to save money when it offers online stuff like that?
Well, because we don't offer an actual program,
right.
It's hard to say. I think the cost is not only financially, but the preparation that the child has when they graduate or the student graduates when they graduate high school and look to go on to post-secondary ed or to go out into the workforce. For the student who is engaged and actively benefiting from the virtual environment, certainly there's a benefit to that because they have flexibility, which is a cost. They have the ability to individualize and specialize, which has a cost to it,
sure.
Not a financial cost. And I think that's important. I think, on the other hand, because we don't have enough data. If we look at the Legislative Audit Bureau or we look at some of the reports that the state or the DPI or independent newspapers have done over time, do we have enough cohort having come through a virtual school long enough to start drawing conclusions?
Right. And that seemed to be one of the big issues, is that there's still a lot of unknowns because of a lack of data so far.
Right. So the student who benefits and moves on, as the two people that Hannah interviewed demonstrated, excellent. But the student who goes, doesn't engage, sort of avoids an expectation of learning, and then ultimately is coming back into the traditional school. Yeah, there's a negative cost to that as well. So it's, yeah.
Melina Mullen, without, again, you're a teacher and you're not in the overall administration, but do you see a lot of students, a lot of change in the amount of students, like people that just stop going mid-period, or do you have any idea what graduation rates or dropout rates might be?
I don't know any rates particularly, but I do know that it's not for everyone. We mm-hmm. have had students give it a try and didn't quite have the discipline or the motivation to be able to do that, who went back to
the
a traditional school. But I can see maybe cost on the end of running the virtual school, busing, mm-hmm. that type of thing. But at the same time, it's not for every student.
Right. Public schools have to take everybody in the district. Is the academy in Barron, are virtual schools able to pick and choose the students that they want, or are they still under the same requirements? Say if a student with special needs, does the school have to take them? Do you know?
No, the students that open enroll, we're just like any other school. We
okay.
provide an education for these students. We are not able to work with IEPs, that type of thing.
What's an IEP?
Individual education plan.
And what does that mean?
It's for a student who has a unique learning disability, that there is something that inhibits their ability to process information or acquire information in a certain manner, and then we write a plan that addresses that or instructs the student in a different manner.
Okay, so the academy is not able to serve that population?
Not at this time.
Not at this time, okay. Tim Leibham, is that given that alone by itself, does that give some sort of an unfair advantage to a virtual charter school that might not have to incur the extra cost to educate someone that is in that situation?
You know, maybe if we took a real broad, holistic view at it, but if we looked at it on an individual basis, and if the purpose of education is to prepare students for options after they leave the traditional high school setting or a virtual setting, I don't get too much into the comparison on that.
Sure.
I believe it's more, I think the rub that happens in public ed is that, and in the traditional school, is the advertisement and the broad attraction of trying to recruit students from one setting to another,
mm-hmm.
in a virtual environment that doesn't have the same level of accountability or standards for addressing, you know, different students. To what degree should that matter? I think it depends on who you are. But that does create some concern and frustration within the two systems or between them.
I'm going to read something here from the DPI, just in my frantic search for knowledge, and also from our gracious producer, Hannah Weichel. The 2009, the Department of Public Instruction had this study that said virtual schools, it found that virtual students that attended virtual charter school pupils, they had higher median reading scores than other public schools pupils, but their math scores were generally lower. That was, you know, in 2009. I don't have any more up-to-date numbers than that. But it seems like from other states, too, that there's really a mixed bag. Some of these online operations have poor performance. Is Melina Mullen, is the academy that you work for, does it have to follow the same report cards kind of school evaluations that public schools do?
We do have to follow the same report cards, and I think we're working towards that to try to. I see I see why math that would be the case.
Why is that? Why do you see that?
I think because it's a little less interactive, but as the curriculum, online curriculum grows and it's a little more interactive with the teachers on the other end, then I think there will be improvement in that area. And I've seen it, so.
All right. We are getting very close to the top of the hour, and in fact, that's pretty much it. I want to thank my guests. Any final words on the thought of online in education in the future? Tim Lipham, quickly.
Nope, this was very nice. I appreciated it, Rich. Thank you.
Melita Mullen?
It's not perfection, it's progress.
There you go. That's our time. Thank you so much to my guests, Eau Claire School District Assistant Superintendent Tim Lipham and middle school instructor at the Wisconsin Advanced Learning Academy, Melita Mullen. Thank you both so much for being here. I'd also like to give a big thanks to Team West Side. That is including Hannah Weichel, who produced this program. Good job. And produced the news piece as well. Thank you very much. And also, Mort Cypress, who handled on-air production, Hillary Crusan for promotions, and Dean Collenbeck and Grace Fair for keeping the train on the tracks. Next week, we've got the outdoor guys. We're talking about fishing and tribal spearing. So tune in next week. Until then, stay warm, stay dry. We'll chat again next week.